This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. The Harris and Trump campaign are making their final pitches in this last week before the election, and their campaign strategists are hoping their final attempts to reach that ever elusive voter pay off in this final stretch. We recently featured a Republican campaign strategist for the Trump campaign, and today we're talking with Devin Remiker, who is the senior advisor for the Harris-Walz campaign here in Wisconsin. Welcome, Devin.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I know you've been a leader in Democratic politics for some time through several elections. I've seen you called a political operative, a veteran strategist. What does the day-to-day work look like for you?
Sure, yeah. I mean, on this campaign, I think one of my favorite parts about it is, whether you're me working in a headquarters out of Madison or you're knocking on doors in Mequon, ultimately at the center of it is a desire to deliver a candidate and a president for the people of Wisconsin who's actually going to reflect our values. And that what that looks like today is a little bit different for everybody. But for me, what that looks like is sort of leveraging all the different roles, experiences I've had in Wisconsin politics over the years to figure out how we can be most efficient, how we can be most strategic, how we can pull every lever possible to bring home a victory on November 5th. So that can take a lot of different forms, whether that's sort of looking at early vote data that's coming in and trying to figure out if we need to make any adjustments, whether that is working with our partner campaigns, Senator Baldwin, the state legislative Democrats, who are running fantastic campaigns all around this state, really just kind of figuring out how we can all swim in the same direction and bring it home.
When you talk about making adjustments, we are in that final week. Has there been any sort of change in focus or strategy in these last few days?
I don't think we've made any changes in the last few days because I think we're seeing what we expected, which is that this was going to be a close race. I've been saying that from the jump, for almost 2 years now. I don't take anything for granted. I've seen so many elections, and I just, work right up until the buzzer, and I think all of us do. Our strategy has pretty much always been to do everything we can, leave no stone unturned in the state of Wisconsin. So although we might make, minute adjustments about, where this phone bank goes for how many hours on which day in order to chase vote-by-mail ballots or something like that, I think we've been well-positioned to be executing on the plan we've been building for years.
Why is Vice President Harris the right candidate for you? What is it about her platform that resonates with you personally?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I really appreciate about the Vice President is her background, and I very much share a lot of her experiences. I grew up in northeastern Wisconsin in the township of Two Rivers, right outside the city. I was on an acre of land on County Highway 42, and my background is working class. My father was a union man at the Kewaunee Nuclear Plant. My mother was a real estate agent. I didn't come from wealth. I didn't come from a lot of economic privilege. When I hear about her background, right, I just relate a lot more to someone who worked at the Golden Arches as opposed to someone who rode down golden escalators. I really appreciate that. I appreciate her agenda for the people of Wisconsin.
Speaking of Wisconsin, what benefits do you think she brings specifically to Wisconsin?
Yeah, absolutely. If you just want to take a look at the policy platform, whether it's a middle class tax cut, whether it is extending the child tax credit, I also look at the cost of buying a home. I mean, I know that's something that a lot of working families struggle with. Her aggressive plan to both build more housing and provide that down payment, which is a huge hurdle for so many home buyers, not even first-time ones. It's really hard out there these days. So I just really see someone who has an economic proposal, not to mention just respecting, half this state, women, their bodily autonomy, their reproductive freedoms, and protecting our very democracy itself. It's all on the line.
the polling in Wisconsin has been confusing, to say the least, and seems like it's changing daily. I just want to review the latest 538 polling that I looked at on Friday had Harris ahead by 0.2. The Wall Street Journal, Trump up by 2. Emerson College poll was a tie. The Marquette poll, the national poll, Harris is up by 1. We get new state results from Marquette polling this Wednesday. Do you watch polls? Is there anything new in the polls that's helpful to you as a strategist?
Of course, yeah. I think we have to, you know, we have to look at everything that changes. I tend to look at trend lines in polls as opposed to any individual result. And I think everything points in the same direction. This is going to be a close race. You know, it's neck and neck, and we can't take anything for granted. You'll probably hear me say that a ton, but I truly do believe it. And I think that's pretty much what they're all saying right now.
Some of the headlines say that Democrats should be nervous, that some of the momentum that Vice President Harris had coming out of the Democratic convention has really waned. Is that something that you have been thinking about, talking about, this loss of momentum?
I certainly don't feel a loss of momentum. Once again, I always expected this to be a race that narrowed at the end. The vice president herself said that shortly, you know, after she became the nominee. And, you know, when I look around our events, our program, we are talking to more voters than ever before. We have more fired up volunteers than I have ever experienced on a campaign. The events that we are doing with thousands upon thousands of energized attendees, once again, like nothing else we've ever seen in Wisconsin politics. So I think it's pretty hard for me to buy a narrative that we're losing momentum or enthusiasm here in the final stretch. Seems like we're just ramping up.
In 2016, President Trump became the first Republican presidential candidate to win Wisconsin since 1984. Then, of course, in Wisconsin in 2020, he lost by a very slim margin. I know you were deputy director of the Biden-Harris campaign in 2020. Have you reflected on those two races, particularly Trump's victory in 2016, to figure out how he won and how maybe to prevent that outcome in this 2024 race?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, what we saw in 2016 was a slight realignment in politics here in the state, where you had rural areas that had been ancestrally Democratic that shifted to be more red, particularly in places like western Wisconsin. I'm thinking of like the Trempealeau counties, the Crawford counties of the world, that used to sort of be our own little blue wall along the Mississippi River in the state that's part of the national blue wall. And that sort of shifted away. At the same time, you know, something that I think Secretary Clinton doesn't get a lot of credit for was the sort of first chip in the red wall in the WOW counties. And that's when we really started to see that support erode. Now, our suburbs haven't moved quite as quickly as some of the other suburbs across the country, but we have seen progress cycle after cycle in eating into vote margins there. So I think really what this is about for us is sort of making sure that we're reaching out to folks in rural communities. We are knocking doors all around the state. We're talking to voters everywhere. We've had events in, you know, traditionally red parts of the state where you don't see principals go, whether that's Wausau, Manitowoc. You know, we've really tried to reach out to everybody everywhere, especially in those small to medium-sized cities that I think feel forgotten a lot.
So other than having Vice President Harris at the top of the ticket instead of President Biden, how is 2024 different than, say, 2020?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of differences. You know, in 2020, as part of the Biden campaign, we didn't knock on a single door on behalf of the president. We had gone fully virtual, and we did as much as we could in that sort of environment. But really, our strength as a party here in the state and why we've been able to help deliver victories for folks like Governor Evers in his midterm elections in 18 and 22 has been our organizing program, which we've had year round. And that is something that was not part of the equation in 2020 in the same way, that is operating at full force right now. And we've, you know, contacted over 1 million voters so far this year. And I mean, right now we are, we just finished a new record-breaking weekend in terms of the number of voters that we've talked to again. So we're very excited about how that's going to scale up and be even efficient and better here in this final stretch.
In 2016, there was some analysis that identified sexism as a barrier for Secretary Clinton as the first female presidential candidate. We heard former President Obama kind of talk a little bit about that when he was concerned about how male voters were maybe having a barrier in this election voting for a woman. Do you think that sexism is a potential barrier for Vice President Harris in this election?
I believe that Vice President Harris has broken glass ceilings wherever she's gone, and she's certainly, been a leader throughout many of the different positions that she's had through time. But really, when I look at where there could be a gender gap or an issue in that regard, I actually look at President Trump. His numbers with women in particular, whether you want to look at that here in Wisconsin or nationally, oftentimes that gap far exceeds anything we see for Vice President Harris. Obviously, that doesn't mean that we're taking any particular, vote for granted in any way, shape, or form. But if I were to try to see who has a bigger barrier based on gender, I think it's President Trump.
Yeah, well, speaking of that gender gap, it does show that Trump is ahead with men. I think he breaks 54% to 45% with male voters. Is there a reason for that, that he might be gaining some with male voters?
I think that there has always been a sort of natural gender differential. It's a pattern that we've seen in election after election. I'm sure there's probably a lot of reasons for that. But I think it might just simply also be more a reflection of where women are at than where men are at this point in time. And I think ever since the overturning of Roe v. Wade, we have just seen so many women rally around reproductive freedom and protecting their bodily autonomy. And I think that has sort of created almost an inverse polarization, right? I think that has made this gap even starker than it may otherwise be. So to me, I personally actually look at the other end of the equation and sort of look at that as the denominator in this situation.
We recently saw Vice President Harris make her 7th visit to Wisconsin. I know she's coming back again this week. Of the 7 key swing states that we hear being talked about, where would you rank Wisconsin in terms of importance of those total 7? Is it number 1? Or maybe you have to say that.
But. Well, I'm biased. I definitely say it's number 1. Yeah, and I don't just say that out of my own personal bias. I think we saw that in 2020, and we ended up the sort of closest, in raw vote total out of the Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, which is sort of the 3 blue wall states that I compare myself to. Obviously, there were a little bit tighter margins in Arizona and Georgia. But if you sort of look at what you need to get to that 270, right, I think the cleanest, easiest path for Vice President Harris, amongst the many paths that she has right now, is securing Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. So I think that's why you've also seen a lot of focus on this state here in the closing stretch. But ultimately, I personally believe that if you even look at 2022 and the results of the statewide elections that occurred in the state, once again, we ended up the closest. So I think that Wisconsin has always had a little bit of a problem with polling and getting that number just right. But you never know what direction that sort of error might go in. But I do think on election night, it's going to be a close race here. And I'm biased. But
it's going to be a close race. Yeah. We'll come away with that. Vice President Harris seems to have switched up messaging in this final stretch. She's talking more about the threat of a potential Trump presidency. Who is she targeting with that message?
I think anyone that cares about democracy, which is a whole lot of people in this state. I think this is a very powerful closing message. I think this was a major plank of Governor Evers in 2022 as well. And I think that was the reason why we saw voters in northeastern Wisconsin and the WOW counties really respond to that. And we reached sort of new levels of support amongst those voters. I think we also saw that a little bit in 2020 as well. So I think it's a very powerful message. And I think Donald Trump's comments are extremely concerning. He's only ramped up that rhetoric in recent days with talk of the enemy within and utilizing the military on American citizens. I think everyone should be concerned.
Former Wisconsin conservative radio host Charlie Sykes is among conservatives who've joined people like Liz Cheney talking about defying party loyalty and ultimately supporting Vice President Harris. Is that a group of voters that you think could put Vice President Harris over the top in Wisconsin?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that if you look at sort of the very close margin that we have here, any group could be the group that puts us over the top. But I think this is particularly a group that we have made tremendous inroads in with, whether it's Mr. Sykes, whether it's Senator Cowles out of Green Bay. We have really seen more people than ever before coming forward and putting country over party. And that's very encouraging to us.
According to John Johnson at Marquette University, turnout in the city of Milwaukee has been declining over recent years. Specifically in 2022 midterm, city turnout was down by more than 46,000 votes compared to 2018. Is there anything that you've been doing to address turnout and increased turnout specifically in the city of Milwaukee?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've had a very comprehensive program there. And I think that, across several fronts, Milwaukee's a very interesting city, heavily segregated, most segregated in the country by a few studies. And whether you look at the Black community there or the Latino community, we have also really tried to engage authentically with each of them. And that's why I think our year-round organizing program is so powerful. You know, we've had organizers, we've had coalition team members showing up in those communities, not just to ask for their vote, but to listen, to do things like community service events. And, you know, that's on top of all the normal campaign tactics like knocking on doors and, trying to make sure that we have media that speaks to them as well. But we've really engaged authentically with those communities, and I'm very optimistic about the city of Milwaukee.
Is a big Milwaukee turnout essential to a Harris victory in Wisconsin?
Certainly helps. It certainly helps. However, you know, I think that we have seen there's just a population decline in the county a little bit as well. And sometimes the number of registered voters that are on a voter roll don't always track with the actual population. There's a little bit of a lag time as voters update their registration and things sort of get cleaned out over the course of years. So I think we're certainly rooting for it. We feel optimistic. But I think we have quite a few paths to victory in this state, largely because we haven't taken any group for granted.
When Vice President Harris was in Milwaukee recently, she was encountered by pro-Palestinian protesters who blame the Biden-Harris administration for civilian deaths in Gaza. We know that in April, over 8% of Democratic primary voters voted uninstructed. Do you think, does Vice President Harris need that group of voters to win? Has she won them over?
Yeah, once again, I think it's hard. It's hard to know how big that group is at this point in time, but I think a couple of things are very clear to me. Number one, we've had a lot of folks that may have voted uninstructed back in April that have come back to the campaign, including elected officials and other community leaders that are now supporting and endorsing Vice President Harris and Tim Walz. Number two, I think the Vice President has continued to speak very powerfully about wanting to bring an end to this conflict and an end to the bloodshed, calling for a ceasefire and the return of the hostages to stop the violence on both sides of this particular conflict. At the end of the day, I think that particularly since you mentioned the April vote, if I was worried about defection sort of within ranks here, you had just mentioned Mr. Sykes, I would look at the number of folks that have voted for Nikki Haley in that primary long after she had dropped out of the race, and they were still sort of casting that protest vote. And I think if you're trying to see where those Republicans are coming from that might come home to us, I look right there.
The top issue for voters in this election has consistently been the economy, and they often vote to former President Trump as the person that they think would be more effective on that issue. He has an advantage of upwards of 15 points in polls on the issue of the economy. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we've been able to make a lot of really solid progress on, folks understanding that the vice president's economic agenda is something that is actually going to center them and families like them, as opposed to providing tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. And we're very optimistic that we've been able to sort of drive home that message with a bunch of our policy platforms. Once again, I mentioned a few earlier, but particularly the tax cuts for middle-class families, the child tax credit, and combating inflation. I think one thing that is that always hits people very close to home is the price of groceries, the price of everyday goods. And even in recent weeks, you've had Donald Trump talking about these tariffs that are just going to skyrocket the cost for everyday families. So although Republicans have sort of enjoyed a little bit of a default advantage on economics, I think our campaign has made tremendous progress in making Wisconsinites and voters across this country understand who's actually looking out for them.
The vice president also seems to have a little bit of weak spot in the area of immigration and the security of the border, which is also noted as a top issue for voters. How do you talk to voters about the success of the Biden-Harris policy on immigration? Is it a success?
Yeah, I mean, I think we had the opportunity for a tremendous success in this country with the bipartisan border bill that Vice President Harris supported and tried to pass through Congress. But ultimately, there is one person who is responsible for that not happening, for us not having a stronger border today, and that's Donald Trump. And that's only because he wanted to keep this as a political issue for his campaign. And I think that's something that we have tried to make very clear to voters, that Vice President Harris is, whether it's on the economy, whether it's on immigration, she is the one that is actually trying to move this country forward and provide real solutions to problems, not just talking points.
you've mentioned the issue of abortion, which is seen as a strength for Vice President Harris, also increasing her support among women voters particularly. Is this the one issue that you think will put her over the top on election night? Is this the issue?
I think, once again, it's a combination of all the things here. But I, you know, if you just look at the level of engagement, the level of folks that have sort of rallied around this particular issue, I certainly think it is one of the biggest drivers of enthusiasm. It is one of the biggest drivers of the gender gap that we are seeing. And I think it is going to be a huge part of this. I mean, it has been just, I think in Wisconsin in particular, has been a central feature, not only of the presidential election, but of the governor's race, of the U.S. Senate race in 2022, and of our Supreme Court race in 2023. And with, you know, the sort of 1849 abortion ban on the books, I think that this is an issue that is just top of mind for voters in a way that we might not quite totally see in other states. So I'm very optimistic this is going to make a huge difference, and hopefully Vice President Harris can help make sure that we pass a bill to restore Roe v. Wade into law when she's elected.
The race for Wisconsin's U.S. Senate seat has also been tightening. The Cook Political Report recently put it into the toss-up category as we see Mr. Hovde really closing in on Senator Tammy Baldwin. I think it's now down, her lead is shrunk to 2 points in that particular assessment. Why do you think that's happening?
I think it's just a natural tightening of a race. Once again, I you know, expected that race to get a little bit closer, and I think Senator Baldwin and her campaign did too. That's why they've been working their tails off for years to reach out to everyone all around this state. So, you know, I think we do see that sometimes in these presidential years, there's a little less of that split ticket behavior. So I think we're just seeing it kind of approach the middle in this highly polarized, partisanized sort of environment, especially when you reach high levels of voter turnout that you see in a presidential election. You just tend to sort of reach that equilibrium a little bit faster.
That race seems to have been particularly negative. There's a barrage of negative ads. Do you think that negative ads in campaigns that are this close are necessary?
I do. I think that it's absolutely necessary to make sure that voters understand the records of the candidates involved. I think it's very interesting to me how Eric Hovde has sort of responded to some of the ads about him, because when I turn on my TV and I watch them, a lot of the time they're his words. It's quotes, it's audio clips of him, it's just things he said. Whereas he attacks Senator Baldwin with, I think, pretty nasty insinuations and allusions that he's hoping sort of tap into some darker impulses of folks in the state. So if he sort of reads his own words as incredibly negative, nasty attacks, I think that's maybe saying the quiet part out loud a little bit.
We've been interviewing candidates for state and federal office all across the state of Wisconsin in this election season. We were asking all the federal candidates about their thoughts on the record amounts of out-of-state money in elections. And I'd like to ask you as well, what are your thoughts on all of the millions of out-of-state dollars that are coming into Wisconsin to influence our elections? Is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Does it help candidates? Does it hurt candidates and or the process?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think ultimately what it is a reflection of is how important Wisconsin is. And I don't think anyone on any side is taking this state for granted at the end of the day. It is a feature of our political system. It's one that personally I could use a little bit less of. I'd love to have a sort of break in the television ads back to back at the end of the day. But I do think it is necessary that folks know the candidates' records. And this is what comes with being the Ohio of 2024.
The Ohio of 2024. You mentioned this, that former President Trump has been criticized for some statements he recently made about his critics, calling them the enemy of within, talking about potentially using the military if there is unrest after the election. I'm wondering, what do you make of those statements? Is that hyperbole? Is that Trump being Trump? Or is that something that you think Democrats need to be concerned about?
I think everyone should be concerned about it. I mean, you know, you have those closest to him, members of his own administration, his longest serving chief of staff, John Kelly, who, you know, just last week said very clearly that he thinks the man meets the definition of a fascist. Once again, this is a military man who served his country with honor and distinction. This is a man who served Trump longer than anybody else in the highest position in his administration. If there's any more alarm bell that folks should be deeply worried about what he would do if he was restored to office, I don't know what that alarm bell is.
Do you expect a peaceful transition of power regardless of the election results?
I certainly hope for one. Yes, yes. And I think that there are many safeguards in our democracy. I think that we saw them tested and them stand up to that test in 2020. So I think regardless of the result, I think we will end up with a peaceful transition.
And you think the election results in Wisconsin will be fair?
Absolutely, without a doubt.
How, in these final days, how are you assessing how well you are doing or how well the campaign is doing in Wisconsin? Are there certain things you're going to wake up and look at or read?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm keeping an eye on early voting numbers all around the state. It's something I anxiously await the newest releases in the morning from the Elections Commission and sort of look through those for any sort of indicators that we may see.
What would early voting numbers tell you?
Yeah, I think that they can give you, they don't always reflect the final result. There's sometimes just inherent biases in who does what sort of method of early voting. But, you know, I think one thing that we're seeing right now is that despite sort of a lot of talk from Republicans that they were going to, you know, really be banking votes early and trying to get their lower propensity voters to show up and have those votes banked for Election Day, we're not seeing that. You know, a lot of the early vote, particularly in, you know, the WOW counties, is being driven by folks who vote in almost every election. They are not capturing lower propensity voters. If anyone is capturing more lower propensity voters, it's actually us in Dane and Milwaukee counties. I'm also not seeing very high turnout in the rural areas so far in the early vote. Once again, the patterns tend to be a little bit different. That might come in at the end here. But it's just something to keep an eye on. That doesn't mean that folks can't show up on Election Day. But in terms of sort of the what Republicans were looking forward to, I'm not seeing it materialize.
So that early vote is one sign that you're going to be looking at in these final days. Any other things you'll be checking in on?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we like to really just keep an ear to the ground. There's some things that polling and early vote data can't catch. It's the things you hear on the doors talking to voters, those little shifts, those things that people are talking about. Right now, all of our conversations are positive and sometimes even more positive than we may have anticipated. So we're very encouraged by that here in the final stretch, but you always want to keep your ear to the ground in the final days.
What do you expect to see in that Marquette poll that's going to come out on Wednesday?
Close election, within the margin of error, I'm sure.
So it might not be information to act on. It's kind of what you would be expecting at this point.
I think it's a little hard to make giant pivots the Wednesday before the election, especially when we're sort of already full tilt. You know, we're going to be leaving no stone unturned, talking to as many voters as possible. So I think it'll just give us maybe a little bit gas in the tank.
So when all the organizing is done and the strategizing is done on election night, where would we find you? What will you be doing on election night?
On election night, I will be looking at many different screens, probably at once, frantically switching between spreadsheets, trying to sort of intake information. Election night, 8 p.m., it's my favorite part of the campaign, where sort of everything comes into focus and you're able to see all the results of your hard work over the course of years. So I'll be looking at counties like Waukesha, like Winnebago County. Oftentimes, they're some of the first to report in the state. And the nice part about it is it gives you a little bit of the sort of WOW and a little bit of the BOW counties, as we've come to call them now, which tend to be counties that we are relying on to, you know, win over swing voters and sort of chip away at some of the big Republican vote centers from the past. So I'll be keeping an eye on those.
What about nationally? Are there any key signs in other states that you'll be particularly looking at?
I think that, you know, in Pennsylvania and Michigan, I think that in Michigan, the vote counting process, they were able to successfully change state law, which we weren't able to get done here due to Republicans rejecting the ability to process absentee ballots before Election Day. So I'll definitely keep an eye on that. I think Pennsylvania is going to take a little bit of time. I'm going to have my eyes peeled for our fellow blue wall states to sort of keep a finger on the pulse there. But I think also I am interested in sort of how close the margins get in Florida, especially with the comments made at the rally yesterday about Puerto Rico at the Trump rally in Madison Square Garden and some polling that shows that early vote may not be as good for them as they expect. I think if we see tighter than expected margins in a few of those states, once we sort of circle back around to the blue walls, which tend to have polls closed and votes reported a little bit later, that could bode well for us.
We've been hearing about how much anxiety this election is causing for people. Why do you enjoy this work?
I think my favorite thing about this is every day and every cycle, it's a new challenge. It's a new puzzle. I don't go into the office and file TPS reports on a regular basis. Everything's different every day. You get to have so many different experiences, things that you never think that you'd do in your life. You can experience on a political campaign. You might not even know you're going to be doing that day. So I think that's one of my favorite things, not to mention the people. You know, working on a campaign, you get to interact both with your fellow staff members who pour their hearts and souls out on a campaign, sometimes moving here from different places just to make the whole thing work, and talking to voters, talking to supporters. You know, some of the best conversations I have are just running into somebody at a rally and getting to know them a little bit better. So I really enjoy the variety, the spice to life that it brings.
All right. Well, we'll be thinking about you this week. Thank you so much for joining Newsmakers today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. It's great to be here.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.